Terrific. Again, thanks very much. Right. Next speaker is Fred Williams of Philadelphia, a longtime ARSC member and I would say frequent and experienced ARSC presenter. Fred has been acquiring a vast collection of concert and military band, wind, and percussion music since 1949. He has also delved into the lives and activities of many of the principals on these recordings, and in the case of Salvatore Menichini, Fred's research work dates back to 1975. Since Menichini worked primarily out of Brooklyn, both Fred and I thought that the New York meeting would make for a particularly appropriate place and time to present this work. Come on up, Fred.
The question is, who is Menichini? I've heard that from the members here most of the hours I've been here. He was the most important man when it came to territorial bands in the United States. He also served longer than any person I'm aware of anywhere as a bandmaster. His influence was tremendous among musicians, not only Italians, but among all musicians. And particularly, he would take a great many of the Juilliard people, some of the world's finest players, and have them play, not on a regular basis, but sufficiently enough that people like Harvey Phillips have told me, and he's the world's greatest tuba player, I think, have told me countless small anecdotes. But before I go into anything, I'd like to say that I have taken the liberty to invite the Minichini family in, and there are many of them. And I just, so that we know who they are, would you kindly just stand, please, the Minichini family? I'm so flattered and delighted and honored to be able to present the story of a man that I've known very little about until I met up with Joe on, and that he was the oldest son, on February the 27th of 1976. Mario and Jean, who are the children that I interviewed, are here. And Sal, who is the son of Joe, is here. These are the principal people that I interviewed, along with Joe, who's been deceased since 1988. These are the principal people that I have based my story on. And if I haven't given sufficient information in the material I have handed out to you, and there has not been sufficient material to hand out to you, I think I plead with anybody who doesn't need a copy to make sure that the family gets copies, because they're the ones that I think are most important when it comes to this project. I also want to cite, before we start, ask Elisa Kohler to stand. Is Elisa here? There's Elisa right over here. She's going to be doing a doctoral thesis based on what I picked up, the music, courtesy of the Dalton boys, their great-grandsons, and Chris, Robert, and Pat here. Would you stand up, please? Chris, Robert, and Pat didn't make it? Yeah. Okay, here's one of them. Thank you for coming. They're instrumental in getting this music not only out of Joe's home, but also to the Fleischer collection, which immediately abused it, and we had to take that out and put it in the ABA repository where I guess it belonged in the first place. And as a result of that and their work, this huge three-ring has the entire inventory, 157 boxes of Italian band music and other music, all computerized for the world to enjoy. We will announce in the journals, there'll be articles about this. It's the most amazing array of band music of the Italian genre that I've ever seen. And there's music that hasn't been played in many years, some of it which should be played immediately by the major concert bands in America. A word about the material that you have in front of you. The first group of papers, and by the way, discard the first page. That's a mistake. Just rip it off and crunch it so I can hear it. Thank you. I feel better already. The first group is the chronology of events, for lack of a better terminology, and it consists of seven pages. That you can take home, and that historically is, I think, of importance and hopefully not too inaccurate. And I have a disclaimer there that states that, gee, I wish I'd put it all in there, but I'm not that good. And anything that I did wrong was unintentional. So especially for the family, I hope they understand. The second thing is what we're playing, except for number two and three. You're not going to hear them. And Tony, where are you? Keep me next music, 4 minutes. Next music. Thank you. The second item is the discography that, sorry, the recordings that you're going to hear, except for the second and third, so follow them. The next item is the Victor recording sessions. In there, you'll see that there's a famous trumpet player that played with him, who's normally associated with the Goldman band, Del Stagers, Wednesday, December 23rd, 1925. But I can assure you that names that are omitted here is like listing the New York Philharmonic and similar orchestras, the Cincinnati, the Boston, others came in and played with Mr. Minichini, particularly in the 20s, and without us knowing even who most of them were. The next list is the places that they played. I said territorial. Well, they did make excursions out to the different places, and that's a list of places, just to give you an idea that, in a sense, they were more than territorial. But most of the work was done for festivals and concerts in the park and other occasions, and some special occasions which are listed. The next group is the entire discography. It wasn't until a month ago that I learned that this is it. There are no more, there are no less, and the only possible difference is in 16-inch radio transcriptions, since he succeeded, apparently succeeded Mr. Creator, in recording on for the WPA. And then finally, the credits are there, and the long pages are simply part of my procrastination. I did this when I was here. You can follow the slides from that. They're in numerical order, and God help you if you can't correlate the two. Now, as I go along, I will make some anecdotal comments here. And Tony, how are we doing for time? Okay. As you saw, he was born in Salerno, or whatever small town right near it. And I think there's some interesting facts that don't often come out. He came over first in 1901 and stayed briefly and went back to Italy. He then went back in 1904 and returned to the United States in 1905. During the time his return to Italy, he eloped and then was and married by the bishop. And I may be quite a little bit wrong on the exact information there, but suffice it to say that he brought his mother and father to the United States and 25 band uniforms and a lot of music. He never played in any band in the United States in the 71, possibly 72 years of directing. But he played exclusively, to our knowledge, clarinet in Italy, particularly with a town band from Salerno, and traveled all around the central part of the country. He was an E-flat clarinet player. Okay. Go ahead. Thank you. He started clarinet lessons at the age of 7. His teacher was very strict with him, and he did not hesitate to use the rod on him. An incident that was related to me was that he came in saying that he was unable to practice, and so the teacher promptly rapped him on the knuckles and said, "Don't come back." But he was back the next week. His teacher was, his name was Landy. One time he came in with the excuse that he had a sore mouth, so the teacher promptly rapped him across the mouth with a stick, and he said, "That will make your mouth real sore." Some of us remember those days of discipline, and he never used any excuses anymore, and I think that kind of taught him many things for the rest of his life. He was a strict disciplinarian when it came to the band, an uncompromising musician when it came to the performance on the instrument, as you can tell from the precision and the type of, particularly the type of clarinet playing that Dunn. In the days when the state owned just about everything in Italy, if you were talented, you had to really produce because the state-owned institutions were where you studied. And if not, they let you go. And, of course, in his particular case, he was kept. But for those who shirked their duties or whatever the case may be, there was a punishment, and that was that you would kneel onto dried peas and beans. Landy was not associated with the conservatory, and as I'd indicated, he toured all around. Salerno is below Napoli, and that's below Rome, so that it's really the central part of Italy that he toured. In 1905, he formed the Banda Bianca, but in information that I got this week, one of those photos that you saw was of the new American Banda Rosas. And the Banda Rosas, the original one, came over here in 1897. And they made Berliner records, quite a few of them, fortunately for us. However, Mr. Souza did have to supply them with uniforms because they came over destitute. Now, the original Banda Rosa apparently broke up in the period somewhere between 1901 and 1904. And obviously, using the name, the American Banda Rosas caught me by surprise because I'd never heard that they had been reconstituted. Now, we don't know the time factor on that. We know that the Banda Bianca was his next band. And, of course, you can see why people don't remember him, because the name changes. There were approximately six or seven over the life of his activities. World War I, or at the beginning of World War I, he changed the name from Banda Bianca to the Italian Royal Marine Band. And I have the title, I think, of the program, Royal Italian Marine Band, but we're just playing with the order of words.
Thank you.
He not only had the finest musicians who played first chair with the major orchestras, New York, example, Gerardo Iosilli, who made records, who played with Creator, who was active in New York, Pietro Capodifero, Pete Capodifero, who played trumpet and made many records, Simone Mantia, or Mantia, as I've been corrected, played baritone horn with Gilmore's band all the way up to through Paul into 1950, early 50s with Paul LaValle, probably the greatest baritone horn player that ever lived, at least and certainly in those days. Enrico Bosacco, Adolphe D'Ambrosio, and the one that I'm particularly interested in, Vincent, I'm interested in all of them, but Vincent Buono, who made many, many solos and duets for the Columbia Record Company. He's a man whose life story should be pursued. Gene, who is in our audience, mentioned that after playing the Italian fiestas, people would bring bouquets of flowers and accolades of all kinds to Mr. Minichini, the likes of which we don't even understand today. The acclaim was unbelievable, and the encores were wonderful. He had brought many band arrangements from the book that you will see here. He also had brought a lot of music from Italy, bought it in Italy, did business with Pagano here, which was one of the big Italian music publishers in the U.S. The concert bands in general were considered on a par with the best of Italian orchestras due to their beautiful blend of instrumentation. And I think this is very important, that the bands that had the sonorous colors and sounds of the orchestra, and I think that was prompted to a great extent by the fact that they started with a B-flat flat sopranino clarinet, went to the E-flat clarinet, the B-flats, the bass clarinet, and of all things, the sarrusophone. I don't know if any of you ever played a sarrusophone. I have at Columbia, as a matter of fact, and arranged music for that in woodwind ensembles, and it's glorious, and it's a kind of a lost state of affairs. During World War I, Minichini gave concerts at the New York Hippodrome, and here's an episode I'd like to tell you about, which to me is rather amusing. There were a number of places. I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of the Hippodrome stage. Actually, I was there. I saw Jimmy Durante and Jumbo. Am I correct, Jumbo? Yeah. And that had to be around 1935-6. So I remember the old Hippodrome. And when I see the pictures of Sousa playing alone on the stage, it's so wide. And I remember it was so cold and so drafty. You could put different organizations on the stage, different places, sort of. When somebody played, they played there. Then they were finished, they would move over. At one night, the New York Philharmonic and the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and Caruso and Minichini's band were on the stage at the same time. And the band was performing, and the large crowd where the band was performing, naturally, you know, like the Minichini family, why they're, you know, over there in front of the Minichini band. And at one point, the chairman came over to them after they'd played some, and he complained that so many of the audience were congregated around the band. I'm sure Mr. Caruso had his congregation too. And people were not evenly distributed and located around the auditorium. And so the audience was clamoring for more. And the man told Mr. Minichini, the chairman, that you've got to stop playing. And Minichini said, "What can I do? They want me more and more." And the chairman said to Mr. Minichini, "You will have to stop." And Minichini became furious about it, and without repeating what was said, I'm not sure we could anyhow, it wasn't taped, the chairman disappeared, but Minichini's band kept on playing. That was characteristic of Mr. Minichini, so this is the kind of thing that happened frequently in his life. Vito's in the audience. How many do I have left? How many do I have left? Go on. I'd like to go on, and I have so many anecdotes that would stuff the next 4 hours, and they're all written down here, but I can't. And I appreciate your attention. I'm so happy that so much of the family could come. And I guess at this point, if there are questions, this is a time to entertain them.
Let's, if you don't mind, let's take another 3 or 4 minutes for a couple questions.
Fred?
Yes.
Does the orchestra band do any recording at all in Italy?
Yes, not the band, but I'm glad you brought that up. I have Joe gave me two 45s of the Banda Roma, which I believe were done in 1952. He had a number of visits over there, as Sal and Mario and Gene can tell us, but I don't know how many. And in one of those trips, he made at least 4 sides, and they were all by one composer, but the Banda Roma did record them, and they are beautiful. I think I've listed them somewhere in the material. I'm not dead certain. Yes?
Did he make any recordings in Italy during the pre-war era?
No.
Pre-1940?
No. None. He didn't spend any time in Italy after 1905 until after World War II.
Now, these American USA cut recordings,
yes,
derivatively issued in Italy on Victor's affiliates.
I have not been able to. Yeah, no, La Voce della Padrone had not issued any of Minichini's recordings. However, Recreators were. And that's a strange story. Huh?
You're certain of that, but they were not derivative.
I'm almost certain of it because I think they would have been listed in the work that's been done in that.
Kelly's work?
In Kelly's work, correct.
He's omitted an awful lot of.
Well, then there's a possibility. Mm-hmm. We can't prove it. Yes, Dick.
Did the band ever broadcast WNYC between them?
I don't know about WNYC, but WOR, they alternated with Toscanini. Hey, that's big time. What we don't know is if there is any disc of it at all. It's kind of, I asked Mike Beal that, and we doubt that, but there's hope springs eternal. We doubt it, yeah. Mike says it's possible.
Fred.
Yeah, Mario. This is Mario.
I think when they recorded, gave concerts from CrossFit Park, many times WNYC would transmit the concert.
See, I'm learning too.
Yes, because that was the city, is still the city station, and they carried the program.
If anybody in there travels does come across this material, please let me know, and then I'll let the family know. We'll all be very happy. Thank you for that information.
Fred,
yes, Dick.
The NYC recordings are allegedly with the Brooklyn Public Library.
Okay, it's getting me down to first base. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
This has been a really great morning. I'd like to thank once again both Don and Fred. These slices of tradition really show us who we are and where we came from, even if only by association. We're going to exit now. Are we going to be exiting to a march?
We're going to be exiting to a symphonic march, I hope. Did we play the last one?
Exit, right. Exit for the coffee. Come back at 11. Thank you very much. Don't be late.
If you don't have a copy, please give a copy to someone else. If you don't want it, please don't take it.